the House General Government Committee. We are in session, and I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2674. Kara, would you like to describe this bill to us?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 2674 adds libraries that are operated by Native American tribes to the types of libraries listed in Oregon Revised Statute that may apply for and receive grant dollars from the Oregon State Library and also participate in interlibrary loan programs.
Thank you, Kara. We have some testimony this morning from folks representing the Umatilla tribes, Melissa Minthorn and Roger Martin. If you'd come back together, appreciate it. Welcome.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, and I have the honor to be the contract lobbyist for the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. For those of you who haven't heard testimony before, the Umatilla Reservation is located just east of Pendleton, Oregon, and among other things, they have one of the finest museums in the state of Oregon, the Temescaloc Museum. With me is Melissa Minthorn, who is both the librarian and archives manager for the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. Melissa first contacted me 2 years ago about the issue of the libraries. Also, as a little background, the state of Oregon over the last decade has entered into a number of agreements, government-to-government agreements between the government of the state of Oregon and the various Indian tribes, many of whom are represented here today behind me, and you'll hear from some of them, to provide services on a government-to-government basis. And I want to praise both the governors, past and present, and the current many members of the legislature for taking into consideration that the governments of these tribes are separate and independent. That's a federal decision by treaty 100 years ago. We didn't treat tribes that way for many, many years, but over the last decade, we've come to realize that these governments, in a cooperative basis, can do a great deal. Melissa first came to me. I think the initial reaction from the state library is we got too many problems already, too small a budget. But she's worked very patiently with the state librarian, who I believe you'll hear from, to develop a program, which she will now present to you. So let me turn it over to Melissa, who's the expert in this area.
Good morning. Thank you. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity today to support HB 2674. As you heard Mr. Martin say, my name is Melissa Minthorn, now Melissa Minthorn Winks. I got married in June, so that's relatively new.
And tell them where your husband is right now.
Currently, my husband is with the Oregon Army National Guard, the 3rd of the 116 CAV in Kirkuk, Iraq. So I'm a little bit unprepared today because I've been dealing with issues at home based on his deployment, and that's a challenge. But today I'm here to testify in support of HB 2674, and I'd just like to tell you just a little bit about myself. I am an enrolled tribal member of the Umatilla Tribes. If you're not familiar, it's a three-band confederation made up of the Cayuse, Umatilla, and Walla Walla Tribes. And we opened our tribal museum in 1998, but I've been employed with the museum since 1992. And originally my job was to research the 10,000-foot square permanent exhibits that we have in our tribal museum. And in that process, we started gathering materials that became what we now call the library and the archives. So with that, I guess I'll give you a little bit of information on why we're supporting 2674. And I guess to begin with, back in 2004, the Umatilla tribes, in conjunction with the Oregon State Library, got to become a party to IMLS National Leadership Grant, which is the Institute of Museum and Library Services, with a group out of Arizona. And our model project basically was up to us to develop, and so between our tribe and the state library, we decided we'd like to begin with developing a network of tribal library archives and museums. And in that process, we had a focus group meeting here at the state library, and we identified some needs, not only with the state agencies, with the tribes as well. And also, we discovered at that time that according to legislation, the state wasn't obligated to allow us to compete for funding, specifically LSTA monies, which is the Library Service and Technology Act monies. And so based on that, we started talking with Mr. Martin and our tribal governing body to figure out how we could resolve or correct that problem. Out of that focus group meeting, we hosted a two-day conference at Temushluk Cultural Institute with a variety of state libraries and seven of the nine Oregon tribes. And at that conference, it was decided that we needed to figure out a way of changing the legislation, which has now become HB 2674. So here we are, supporting HB 2674, and in that, I guess what I'd like to do pretty much is just read to you the last 2 points on the written testimony that I believe that you have in front of you. And we, being the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla and Temushluk Cultural Institute, support HB 2674 because it would include tribal libraries in the list of public libraries eligible to receive technical and financial assistance from the state of Oregon. Our library and archives will not be able to access funds, but would be able to use technical assistance from the state agencies themselves. And that the reason for that is because the legislation calls for public libraries to be circulating, and at this point in time, our library is not. It's a research library, meaning that you have to come into our facility to access our materials. And basically the reason for that is because we believe that our material is very unique and generally one of a kind and irreplaceable. So at this particular time, we're not prepared to allow our materials to circulate. But the more that we develop and work with other agencies to upgrade our technical knowledge and our capacity, we will look at that at some point down the road. But right now, we're not. And so, I guess in conclusion or in closing, the Library and Archives Program remains interested in continuing to develop this collaborative partnership with the state of Oregon, and we support this legislation because it continues to build on the government-to-government relationships already established through Executive Order 9630 and SB 770. So I'd like to thank you once again for allowing me the opportunity to provide testimony, and if you have any questions, I would be glad to answer those. Thank you.
Members of the committee, questions? Thank you. Thank you very much for coming, and thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you.
In collecting for the Umatilla tribes, and best of luck to your husband and your family.
Thank you so much.
Justin Martin from the Grand Run.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin, and I'm here today on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, where I'm also an enrolled tribal member. We are very proud to support House Bill 2674 this morning. The Grand Ronde Tribe and the Tribal Library staff really have appreciated the collaboration and work that's been done to get House Bill 2674 to the position it is in today. Originally, the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde were made up of 26 bands that were moved to the Grand Ronde Reservation. Originally had about 69,000 acres. Over time and through several allotments, those acres dwindled, and ultimately the tribe was terminated in 1954 and left with a 2.5-acre cemetery. In the meantime, and through several acts of Congress, we have been restored in 1983 under the Restoration Act, and also were able to get some land back in the 1988 Grand Ronde Reservation Act. Restoration Act in 83, Reservation Act in 88. Since then, we've worked very hard with the community to do what we can as a member of that community. And you will see certain things that we have done, the Health and Wellness Center that contributes not just to the tribe but to the entire community in a 35-mile radius, working collectively with local public safety enforcement officers. We have really taken this community philosophy and worked very hard to establish those relationships. Specific to library efforts, we began those in the early 1990s. The Grand Ronde Tribal Library offers a number of programs that are targeted to children and youth that include weekly story time sessions and monthly Saturday activities. The library offers limited book services to seniors in the local area, and we hope to increase this in the future. Our tribal library has a significant Native American collection that could be available for circulation purposes to library users from other areas through this intertribal library loan program. And we, much like the Umatilla and the other tribes throughout the state, realize the importance and the value of the true spirit of the government-to-government relationship. We are very appreciative of how Oregon has been a very progressive state in the way that we have dealt with state-tribal relations and managed the government-to-government relationship. We are also very proud of the fact that the Grand Ronde and the Spirit Mountain Community Fund, which dedicates 6% of net profits to nonprofit organizations and charitable organizations throughout an 11-county service area, has been very instrumental in helping other libraries throughout the state. That includes the Western Oregon University Library, the City of Eugene Library, Dallas, Canby, Independence, Sheridan, Willamina, Salem, and then finally the Library Foundation as an organization. Again, we're very proud to build those community ties and to be able to offer those types of investments in communities. With that, the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde appreciate your time and again urge the passage of House Bill 2674.
Questions for Mr. Martin? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Members of the committee, there are some things at your desk that need to be entered into the record. There is a letter from the Coquille Tribe Library and a letter from the Burns Paiute Tribe folks. There's also a fiscal impact statement that comes to a nice number, zero, from the library. I see Jim Shepsky from the State Library. I'd like to invite him to come up and sort of put us in the picture of what this looks like. And Nan Heim from the Library Association is also here. I'd like to invite her to please come up and weigh in, if you would.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Shepke. I'm the director of the State Library. I'm here today to answer questions about this bill. I should explain that I did not sign up for testimony and indicate formally that the State Library supported this bill. And the reason is that our State Library Board has a very formal process about supporting bills, and their last meeting was at the end of January, and this bill hadn't been introduced as yet, though we knew about it. But what I can tell you is that the State Library Board did discuss this bill in concept, and in general, they were very, very supportive of this bill. And I can tell you why. It's because It fits with what we've been trying to do for the past several years to bring the tribal libraries in Oregon into the library community in the state. And I think this bill, and my board believes that in general this bill is an important first step in that effort. What this bill does is it adds tribal libraries to public, school, and academic libraries as the kinds of libraries that can benefit from what we call the resource sharing programs of the state library. And those are enumerated in the bill, and there's three of them at the present time. One is a program that enables all libraries to use electronic databases that we license for libraries throughout the state. The second program is a program that allows libraries to ask reference questions to each other. If they can't answer a question for one of their patrons, they can pass that on to another library and get the answer. So we're all working together on that. The third program is a program of delivery of materials between libraries. So what this bill does is it enables the tribal libraries to participate on an equal basis with public, academic, and school libraries in these programs. And the fiscal impact statement that we filed shows a zero fiscal impact, the reason being that in all three of those, well, I should say, there's three programs enumerated. We're actually only doing the first two at the present time. We're not doing the courier delivery program, though that is authorized in law. But we are doing the database program and the reference referral program, and in both those cases, we've already designed those programs so that to add the tribes to those programs will not cost any additional money. Even the database licensing program, we've written into the contracts that we've signed with database vendors. We've written those contracts in such a way that to allow the tribal libraries to begin using those databases will not increase the cost, and we have a 5-year price agreement. So we're very pleased to say that we think this is a good bill, that it will be a bill that begins to bring the tribal libraries into the community of libraries throughout Oregon. We'll all begin working together more collaboratively, and they can benefit from these programs that other Oregon libraries are already benefiting from.
Thank you, Mr. Shipke. You got a question. When does your board meet again?
Our board meets again on April 22nd.
Okay, thank you.
Hi. Thank you. I'm Nan Heim, representing Madam Chair, members of the committee, representing the Oregon Library Association. Our association has over 900 members who are associated with all types of libraries in the state, throughout the state. My situation this morning is similar to Jim's in that our board hasn't yet taken a formal position. They meet tomorrow morning, but I would be very surprised if that position is anything but enthusiastic support. I have recommended support. Our current president strongly supports the bill. I certainly haven't heard of any objection, and the association has long supported resource sharing among all types of libraries. So I think that I will be conveying their support to you after tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions of either of these two folks?
Thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
Seeing no further testimony, I'm going to close this hearing on House Bill 2674 and open a hearing on House Bill 2738. Kara, you want to see if you can get us started in this?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
A little bit more complicated.
Members of the committee, House Bill 2738 changes the title of some employees of the Oregon Department of Transportation from manager to administrator. It specifies that these administrators are in unclassified service in the state human resources system. Further, it authorizes appointment of executive assistants to ODOT administrators and specifies that they are unclassified service. While I know that representatives from ODOT will speak further to this issue, I just wanted to point out to you in my staff summary, I did give you the statute that lists who falls in unclassified service within Oregon Revised Statute, but generally employees who are listed as unclassified are unrepresented, excluded from collective bargaining, and serve at the pleasure of the governor or an agency's appointing authority. And then there's this laundry list of folks from statute who qualify under that particular ORS code.
Thank you, Kara. By way of preamble for members of the committee, I will give you a fair warning. This is an empty room, and it would appear that you know, this isn't a hot issue, but I can guarantee you that within this body, particularly, the number and title of state employees is it very much an issue. Mm-hmm. And so these folks have come to us with a request, and they will explain all of the ramifications of it. And I'm going to ask Mike Marsh to come up and describe this to you. So don't be fooled by that empty room. You may leave here and get questions, so be prepared to answer.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mike Marsh from the Department of Transportation. Hope the members have my testimony before them. I'll summarize it here. I am here in support of House Bill 2738, and this bill was introduced at the request of the Oregon Department of Transportation, and it authorizes us to make executive support positions to division administrators part of the unclassified service, and it updates titles. In 1993, the statutes governing the department were reorganized to remove references to agency divisions, and the statute spelled out instead that the director would appoint managers for areas of critical concern. So, in essence, an area of critical concern relates to primary programs and divisions of the department. Most agencies use the term division instead of the term area of critical concern, and also use the term administrator instead of the term manager for those that head those divisions. Since these terms are not meshing with other state agencies and do cause some challenges for us internally, we brought forward the statutory change so we can mesh those positions appropriately into the statute and have unclassified service applied appropriately. Unclassified service, just to make sure our definitions are clear, that's the reference that's used in statute, unclassified service. However, executive service is the title that's used when the governor or division heads appoint a person to an unclassified status. So it's called executive service. And that position, the function of that position, and the reason why that element is established is so that a position will serve at the will of a director. As committee staff indicated, that's critical in many positions to have that ability to appoint at will and to also remove at will to ensure accountability. The problem for us on these positions is that due to the lack of clarity with the ODOT statute, some executive support staff in ODOT are classified as executive service while others are not. What we need to have is have the consistency for each division administrator to be able to conduct confidential business and to do so with support staff who have access to email, voicemail, other confidential materials, and ensure that they don't have to work around this as a limitation. And right now, that's the case. So we'd like to achieve that ability to deal with these confidential business items by passing the bill. What the bill will do is establish statutory authority for unclassified executive support for deputy director and administrator positions within the state personnel relations law. Therefore, we have the unclassified authority, or the authority for unclassified position establishment. Secondly, just as a housekeeping item, we're eliminating the use of the term assistant director because it's no longer used. And third, providing for the use of the term administrator, which clarifies that they're not just a manager within the division, but are the administrator of that division, which is a standard parlance used in state government for those that head divisions. And it allows for clarity between agencies, so it's clear, as well as dealing with the public, about this being the person that's responsible for the division, and those that serve directly for them can be appointed under them. The passage of 2738 will support the consistency that I mentioned by ensuring appointment of executive assistants into the unclassified service. It clarifies the roles and ensures accountability in a consistent way. And Madam Chair, I'm open to any questions.
Thank you. And Mr. Marsh, just so we're clear, no way does this bill authorize any new employees within ODOT.
That's correct.
Thank you. And
so the job title changes inherent in here offers consistency across the state government for certain positions.
It does not make new managers in ODOT.
Correct.
Thank you. Put that on the record. Any further questions, Mr. Galizio?
What are the numbers we're talking about here? How many people will be affected?
Right now, it would be just three people, Madam Chair and Representative Galizio.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, how come nobody picked that up when this was first implemented?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, in 1993, there were a lot of reorganizational discussions, and there was an interest in trying to bring up elements of the Department of Transportation that had not been divisions before. And they were trying to make sure that functions such as transit, rail, and others, which had not been at a high enough status in the opinion of the legislature, to make sure that they were represented well at a high enough level to deal with the public in a direct way. Now those entities are separate divisions. We fully recognize that transit, rail, safety, and others are important and just as important as highway in terms of the functions that we do. And so we wanted to get rid of confusing language about what's in the statute now, make sure it's clear that these folks who head those divisions as well as other divisions are administrators, and we need to have the executive support to them in the unclassified service.
Go ahead, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You made that explanation during your testimony. I guess it just didn't click with me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Esquivel had one first.
Yes. Says it may have a financial impact statement not yet issued with our printout here.
May I speak?
Yes, please.
Can we expand upon that?
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair, members of the committee. That is our internal structure that our revenue and fiscal staffs have not had a chance to respond to this bill yet. Before this comes to work session, you'll have those sheets. That's the number. That's the line I have to use if a statement has not been given to me that says there's no fiscal or revenue impact. So it's technical at this point.
Pending.
It's pending. We're kind of at a roadblock with lots of paper needing to come from revenue and fiscal, and we have more bills than we have statements right now.
Representative Esquivel, that's a great question, and what it that's the reason that we're required to put that in there, so you'll ask that question. And it will not Make get sure dropped in case it goes a certain way. Good call, good heads up, and that's why it's in there. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Marsh, just one question on the same line. Does the change in title require or do you anticipate any salary changes with the change?
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, no. And if I could also clarify for Representative Esquivel, there will not be a fiscal impact, and I understand the process of getting the paperwork to support that, but I can indicate that that is not going to have a fiscal impact.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative.
This might have also been, this might be a question that's already been answered, but currently, those three employees are included in collective bargaining, correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, so this bill would
correct
those three employees, and they would no longer have that.
That's correct.
Okay.
But they move into the same level of classification in the executive service. So it's the same job description, and the issues around the positions are the same.
Salary? Is it the same salary?
It's almost exactly the same salary. There may be a dollar or two difference, but it's not going to have a fiscal impact for the agency. In other words, not beyond the standard of what we talk about of virtually no impact.
Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you explain to me how someone who is a manager is in the collective bargaining unit?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, the administrators are not in the collective bargaining unit, but the support person for the administrator, which is part of what we're defining here, we're talking about executive assistants two division administrators. Three of them are in the collective bargaining unit at this time. Actually, three positions are. Only one person would actually be affected, and the way that process works is that with the action of the legislature, that person would stay as represented by the union until that person leaves the position, and at that time, the position would transfer to being executive service. So we're not affecting the individual incumbent in a position at this time.
Thank you.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe just explain the thought process that these people would be employed at will versus somebody right underneath them is not. Just I'm trying to get an understanding for where do we use, and what's the cutoff?
Madam Chair, Representative Cameron, the concept is that when you have an agency head, the direct reports to that agency head are usually unclassified or executive service. And then those people who have a primary assistant who deals with all their support activities, also having access to everything that they do in terms of email, voicemail, disciplinary actions, typing up items that would implement what that person does, are usually considered executive service. What we've got in this situation is a statute that was developed in 1993 that's very fixed and controlling, whereas some agencies don't have statutes like the statute that we're looking at here and do not have something that controls their actions regarding this position, so they can create them separately. We have statute that talks very clearly about it, ODOT, because of that 1993 reorganization, so we need to have the, it mentioned specifically to be able to make those people unclassified. Does that answer your question?
Not really, but that's okay.
Go through it again.
Can I give another shot?
I could be here all day.
I don't want to draw too much, but
I think it might help if we do reduce some of the executive speak and talk about the kinds of things these folks do on the job that might relate to the bargaining units and the personnel information and why they are outside the unit.
To go through that piece in a, maybe a little bit more clear fashion. So you have the agency head, and then you have usually division administrators that report to that agency head. That division administrator has anywhere between, in state government, 20 and 1,000 people reporting to them. And so that position has a lot of confidential work to be done in terms of disciplinary actions, policy issues, carrying through on performance appraisals, everything else that that position has to do. And therefore, a lot of that is confidential activity that you'd like to make sure is not part of potentially union discussions or what could become a grievance on the part of a lower-level manager or employee, to ensure that that is the work that they do is separate from the potential of getting it into a union-based discussion. So by having unclassified service, it means that that person has to be confidential. They have to report to the administrator or to the director and can be removed if they are not confidential. And that's why the positions are that way.
Thank you.
Does that help explain this? You want to talk just a bit about the at-will language here, too?
Yes, Madam Chair. At-will means that a agency head or division administrator can remove the person at will, so they do not have the same level of civil service protections that an employee who's in a classified service would have. So therefore, it's much more like the private sector, where a business person can determine that an employee has not been confidential with employee policy, with a business policy, or with issues in the business, and removes the person without having to go through the same level of hearings and protections that would exist for a civil service position.
And one more question from me, Mike. How many ODOT employees would fit into this classification?
In unclassified service?
Yes.
Right now, they're approximately 25.
Yes. Out of how many ODOT employees?
Out of how many? Approximately 4,600.
Thank you. Okay. Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your consideration.
Now that no one else has signed up to this heart-stopping subject, so we're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2738 and be no further thing for the good of the order. Adjourn this meeting of the General Government Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.